You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
30, 30, 30. You are now rocking with the queen, and it's time to get real.
What's up? Welcome to episode 14 of 30, Flirty, and Thriving. It's your girl, AB, and co-host, Jalen.
Hey, what's up?
What's up? So today we have a really exciting episode. I think every episode is so exciting, but we have two guests here with us today who have lived incredible lives and written a story for all of us to enjoy from their life experiences. So I want to first introduce our guest, Miss Minister Rosalind Palmer Pryor.
Hi.
Hello. How are you? Thank you for being on.
Thank you for having me. It's going to be an awesome time tonight.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then we have Gunner Lindblom, right?
Yes. Woo. Knew you were my fan.
Oh, boy.
Got a cheerleader over here. What? She likes me.
Wait, don't get in trouble now.
I know, right? I'm already in the doghouse here. I gotta relax.
So thank you for being here. We're excited to have you. I know you've got a lot of things going on. You were actually here recording a podcast last night, right?
Yep. I was on IT and the D.
Perfect. Okay. Well, good. We're so glad to have you on. So I want to start with Rosalind and just kind of introduce yourself to our listeners and explain a little bit about who you are, kind of what you've done or what you're doing now.
Okay. I live in Jackson, Michigan. This is my first book that I've actually written called Shackled. I'm talking about my life story, talking about how I grew up, not giving the story all the way away. But I grew up in foster care and I went through a lot of different things and a lot of different struggles, and I overcame them by asking for forgiveness of my sins first, learning about God and how I overcame each one of those obstacles or shackles, they're called in the book, to overcome to be a better me.
So I haven't had a chance to read your book. And when you first, like I talked to you earlier,
yes.
I had went to go purchase it and, you know, Amazon just wasn't working with me. So, but you did bring copies and I'm so excited because now I get to read it. So,
yes.
So tell us a little bit about what some of those shackles were for you and not only how, what kind of inspired you to overcome them, but what inspired you to share that story with the world?
I went through a lot of different things, and there is a reason that you go through everything in life. And I believe God is using my story to help someone.
Amen.
And I want to do that. And the first thing to do is to tell my story. In order for someone to see you different, they have to know your story and that you can help them heal in any given situation. So if you find yourself not being open to someone and not willing to share what you've been through, some people will not open up to you at all. And the realer that you are with the people that are out in the community now, the more open they are to talk to you about their circumstances. If you're one who wants to be fake and phony, you're not going to be able to help anybody in the body of Christ. You have to be real because mm-hmm. it's real stuff.
So would you say that finding Christ is what kind of guided you to share your story?
No.
Or did you find Christ through sharing?
Yeah. Well, I've been saved for a long time.
Okay.
I've been walking this walk with God for a long time. I knew God was going to use me in some way. There's no way in the world that someone could go through all of that and God not use it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way.
Absolutely.
There's no way. And if I can help someone heal, if I can help someone overcome, if I can help someone see themselves in a better light,
mm-hmm.
If I can help someone look past themselves and see themselves in a different light, then I've done a good service.
Okay. Good.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So Gunner, now I know you've overcome some of your own shackles, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, nice.
I like that. That was a nice pun. Right.
So tell us a bit. Now, you have a series of books that you've published, and these are these loosely based on your experience?
I get that. I'm going to put this up here. I get asked
okay.
that.
You got to talk into the mic, though. So wait a minute so you can just come back when you're ready. There we go. Oh, don't. Okay, you over here breaking stuff.
Terrence, what's up? That's just par for the course. So I get asked that a lot, and my books are fiction. However, there is some parts of the book that are loosely based on my life, and you won't know what they are, but certain people will know who they, like close friends, family, they'll know that that part was definitely based on his life or experience or character or whatever. Okay. But my novels are fiction. It's they're being called the next Godfather. I mean, I say that a lot in interviews and stuff, only because so many people are constantly saying, you wrote the next Godfather. You know, this, you're the next Mario Puzo. Mm-hmm. We've been waiting 40 years for this. Why isn't Martin Scorsese on top of this? And I'm working on that, too. In fact, I had a guy here from Detroit. I don't know if you ever heard of him, Matt Simoncini. He worked for Lear. He was a CEO of Lear Corporation. Big dude, made $15 million a year. So he read both of my books and then asked to meet me. And then I sat down with him, and he looks at me, and he goes, man, you're the best writer in the world nobody knows about. And I said, well, thank you. I'm working on it, though. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Nobody gave me the blueprint on how to, you know, market a best-selling book. Mm-hmm. But I mean, he's like, you know, I was in Europe on my private jet on business, flying around. He's like, I'm a slow reader. Both of your books were over 500 pages each, and you know, but I read a lot, he said, and a lot of authors. He said, I blasted through both of your books in 3 days. Couldn't put them down. I was like dreaming about them. I couldn't even go to sleep. I had to finish. And he's going on and on and on. He's like, dude, you know, someday they're going to make a movie and you're going to be mega rich and famous. But after that, I was like, you know, thank you. I've heard that a lot, but it's hard to market a book. That's the hardest part.
That
you know?
Is hard.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And then he let me drive his Ferrari around on Facebook Live for 20 minutes, which was super cool. And the cool thing about that was, is that he had just got it, and he never really, you know, let it have it. So I just assumed that he let it have it all the time. I didn't know he just got it. So I just burned out the what? And he's like this, my $300,000.
Yeah, you know, like, whoa.
He was freaking out, but I didn't care. That's what made it even more cool. Yeah. But I have another series called the Limblim Chronicles, which are real stories from my life before I went to prison. They're kind of chronicle how I got involved in organized crime and just crime in general, and how I was.
But wait a minute, because our listeners don't know what you're talking about right now. So give a little bit of backstory on you,
yes.
Your history, how you came to write those books.
Yes. Well, okay, so that's the Limblim Chronicles. Actually, are a kind of a chronological stories of how I got involved in organized crime. Now. Mm-hmm. Allegedly, members of my family were tied to organized crime.
Okay.
My mother was Grace Carmela Toko, and some people know that Toko name or not. But it doesn't matter because my Uncle Pete was kind of a shady character, and when I was about 14 years old, he's only 12 years older than me, and he saw me as something, as a tool, kind of. And he, I do this for me, run this and do that, handle this, do that. And at 14 years old, I began doing crime. And I was trained to believe that it was okay, like to go into this gray area of criminal activity. And then, you know, kind of beat it in your head that you're just a sucker if you go to work every day. You know, I'm like, yeah, that's a sucker does that. When I could do this, or I could sell steroids or weed or hustle somebody, play craps or whatever it is, and make five times more money, and then, you know, hang out in the club every night. But in the end, it's not worth it. And my life kind of crescendoed at 29 years old. I was hooked on drugs. I was gambling. I was doing all the wrong things, womanizing. And then I ended up in prison for 13 years for a whole litany of crimes, from everything from extortion to bank robbery. And I was sentenced away for 13 to 50 years. And I walked out 13.3 years later with 9 novels. I decided at that point, and this is where our stories kind of coalesce. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I knew that right away, you know, I knew I had a gift for this. I mean, I've known it all my life, but I wouldn't ever apply.
So have you always been a writer then? Like when you were
in my mind?
No,
but yes, actually I could write really well in school. Like I had an old friend. She was a girl, not a girlfriend. I'm just trying to say we had a conversation about trouble I'm in at the moment. And so She said, you used to write me these beautiful letters. They were so good, I kept them for like 10 years after high school. But then I ran out of room, I'd throw them out, but I wish I would have kept them. Yeah, yeah, sure, because they're going to be worth money someday. But whatever the case is, I could write really well. My grandmother and my grandfather used to say, you write those beautiful letters. And so I was good at it. But that's not really the craft I have. The art that I have is being able to craft these really complex plots and weave them together using subplot and really intricate, detailed like things. Like at the end of my books, if you're not in tears, you're very close. All of them, nine of my.
You're a storyteller.
Yeah. And so, or you're in tears, but you're also going, "Oh my god, how did I not see that?" And like, wow, what just happened? You feel like you just had a train wreck or something. You're just like, you're so invested into the story and the characters. Like 90% of the people tell me that once they get to about when there's 30, 40 pages left, they stop reading it. I'm like, why? They're like, because I don't want it to end. So I read a page at a time. I'm like, you got to end someday. And then they finish and they get mad at me because, all right, this is BS. Where's volume 3? You can't leave it like this. I'm like, yeah, well, volume 3 is coming. When I get to 200,000, you know, units, I'll write volume 3. In the meantime, I have 7 other novels that I'm going to publish that I've already written. You know what I'm saying? So I'm working on those too.
Well, and that's not including the Lynn Bloom Chronicles.
Not including those are being made into a TV pilot.
Which
says crazy. Those in themselves have been read 2 million times or more. I don't know, 2.5 million probably. And I hope that Craig Timmons, he's the owner of NCS, the website that I write for. And I don't know, we haven't tracked I haven't got the metrics on them.
So right now they're on a website.
Yeah, they're on a website. And that is National Crime Syndicate. So you just go there, and it is a really highbrow website. There's a lot of fan groups for this mafia stuff. Like the big fan pages, fan groups. There's like millions of them. And so the one that I write for is considered the Ivy League. They're the top shelf. They have a whole team of journalists, ex-FBI agents, writers, the best of the best. And so they're really top shelf. And then I write these Limbo Chronicles. Now, some producer from Atlanta reaches out to me and says, this is crazy. And part of this I shouldn't even say, but let's hope he's not watching. But yeah, so they have a really get in trouble again. They have a new format. I'll say that they're using to shoot movies but not television. And he wants to apply this format. This guy's made dozens of movies. He's 25 years in the industry, and he's got a hold of these Limb Boom Chronicles. And he says, you know, my partner read them, and they're perfect for applying them to this format. Wait a minute.
Oh, I was like, wait, what is happening?
So I knew what it was.
Godfather, right? All right. So he said, so anyway, he says, I want to take these things and turn them into a pilot using your format. And he's like, would you agree to that? I said, hell yeah. And then I reached out to a couple of my friends who are actors. And one of them, Paul Borghese, super cool guy. He might be watching this too. He says, I would, you know, kind of almost pro bono-ish. I shouldn't have said that because he's union. But so he would pretty much act and play my uncle, and he's like, direct it. I'm like, yes, you're the perfect guy to direct it. So anyway, that happens. It'll be super cool, really interesting, because the company that's doing it, the producers that are doing it, they have an agenda. It's not just, hey, listen, we want to sell your thing to a studio or a network or whatever. We want this project to be our flagship to prove that we could take this format that's being used in the movies and apply it to television, and it allows them to be made much faster and much easier. And they're gonna start off with me in my cell. This is what's really cool: a character based on me, an actor in the cell, and he will get asked by his cellmate, a bunkie or whatever, a question, and then he'll turn around, he'll start talking to him, and then he'll tell a story which will flash back in time to a point where I was like 14 years old.
You're giving the whole story away. You don't know nothing.
Told the whole book.
No, that's not the book or the story. That's just the format. No, the stories are really not that complex, but each one has a story in itself that lead to another story and another story and another story.
Right. It definitely sounds interesting. It sounds like, I mean, like you said, there's these fan groups that obviously are.
Dudes.
Yeah, that's crazy. Just off of something that probably started as originally a bad experience for you, and then you found this unique ability that you had to tell stories in a way that captivated audiences, which I think is really cool. And now it's kind of like turning into more and more opportunities. And I think it goes back to what you were talking about, Rosalind, how you have these shackles.
Yes.
And they created opportunity for you. Like you said, everything that you go through is an opportunity for you to learn and grow and help
Turn
others.
Even my prison time.
Absolutely.
I mean, I haven't been a man of faith a long time, but in prison, I was totally gave my life to God and everything changed just like that. I mean, just like magic. And then I met my wife, which was like magic, you know. Mm-hmm. I was in prison when I met my wife. She started writing me 6 years. I had 6 years to go. And she waited. She moved up north. She waited for me. I married her the day I got out. But all that is, like you said, the way they call them, shackles, hurdles, whatever you want, obstacles, they are to make you a better or stronger person, to give you strength to persevere. And if you utilize them, if you use them to your advantage, anything can be accomplished. I know a lot of people, I get every day, people are like, man, you're such an inspiration, you know.
That's good.
And I'm like, you know what? I guess at this point, I understand now that's part of my mission. So
absolutely.
Would I go back and change anything? No. And it's people say, 13 years, you were in a cage. You wouldn't go back. I said, no. The most important reason for it is my faith. My second most is my wife, because it brought me to my wife.
Yes.
And that's what matters the most.
Absolutely.
And I'm happy with my life now. I mean, I'm older, but I lost 13 years. I lost my 30s. But,
well, but did you lose them?
Did you just really focus them?
Right. That's true, right? I like that. It's a great way of looking at it. I just sat super, like, telefocused for 13 years.
Tunnel
vision. Nine novels. I'm like, I just there popped out. That's really
people
all it was.
Need
it was a writing boot camp.
People need it. Just like Rosalind was saying, like, she was doing it for people that basically had the similar story to her to help. You know,
to help them.
Yeah.
So some people get lost.
Change a lot of lives like that.
So let me ask you then, because like he obviously was in prison and he was tunnel focused on writing these novels. How did you find time? It's hard like to write a book and to find the time.
I did it after work. Every day.
Like every day. What was your process like in writing this book?
I went through each. In the first book, I can't talk about the second one. I promised I wouldn't. But the first book, what I did is I took a walk through my life as I grew up. And I always talked about my life. I always learned from my life. And so I just went from day one, basically. And in this book, I'm at the age of 25. So I just took a walk through my life, slowly but surely.
Oh, so this is up to 25, and then there's another book that's going to take... Oh, my gosh. That's exciting.
Yes.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So in this book, I'm up to 25, and I just take a walk through my life.
Okay.
And in this book, you'll see everything that I went through as a child and then growing up with it.
Now, did you, through the writing process, go back and reread? And
the editing phase is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did you do it on your own? Did you have other people read? Did you have a professional, an editor? Like,
how was the process?
What was the process like? Yeah.
So what I did first is I wrote what's called a manuscript. And me and my children, because I was talking about my life, I wanted them to read it before it was edited by anybody. If there was anything that they wanted me to remove from it, I was willing to remove.
Absolutely.
And they didn't want anything removed. So in the process of them reading the actual manuscript, they actually helped me edit it. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, Mom, you should put a word right here. Mm-hmm. Or let's X out this. This is what you should say right here to make it... if I left out have, or, you know,
they
help with that. That's simple proof.
Yeah, that's proofreading.
For me, I had, it takes me a week to write one chapter. I could knock out a chapter, because my book's very long. They're both over 500 pages. But I could knock out a chapter in 3 hours on my typewriter in prison. But to go back and edit and proof it, I do that about 10 times for every chapter.
So after you finish a chapter, then you just reread, edit, reread, reread,
and I'd have
edit.
To print them out every time. So I'd have to print it out on a
scrap
paper.
Did you have anyone else read them?
Well, I have tons of people in prison who read my manuscripts. And once in a while, they pick stuff out. But, you know, I got to a point where I'm so good. You know, I wrote nine out. But the real editing came when I got out. And then I'd have beta readers do it. So at first, my wife, who has been a professional editor before, she's worked in publishing, she would go through proof line, what's called line edit it and proof it. And then then we'd have several beta readers, which mm-hmm. are just people who are really well read, mm-hmm. who do a lot of reading, go through with a fine tooth comb and pick out any inconsistencies, any typos, errors, right. grammar, and we go. And sometimes for me, because I've read so many books, I have such a very broad vocabulary. Mm-hmm. So when I get several people saying I need to dial down my big verbiage, mm-hmm. You know, because for me, I'm like, I understand the word, you know, superfluous or something like that. But another person might not, like, what the hell is superfluous mean? Mm-hmm. You know, so people are like, just take those words out and just put.
So how many beta readers would you say you had?
I'd say on average at least five beta readers.
For each chapter?
For each chapter?
Each book?
Each book. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so then for me, my book went to Christian Faith Publishing.
Okay.
And they have editors.
Really?
Yeah, I told them. I said, my book probably wouldn't fit. Or your.
This ain't it.
Yeah.
My wife's writing a Christian book, though. And I thought, two of them.
Okay, nice. That'd be awesome. And so they do an editing phase. And then for everything that they want to change in your book, mm-hmm. they send back to you for you to agree or disagree.
Okay.
Or you can choose another word if you want. Or you can make the sentence different if you want. But they give you suggestions. They don't do hard edits where they make all the decisions for you.
Mm-hmm.
They give you suggestions and then you read them.
So did you vet publishers or did you just go to them or did they come to you? How did that work in terms of finding how you were going to publish your book?
I did vet publishers. Mm-hmm. And then for Christian Faith, what you have to do is you submit your manuscript. They read it and then they approve or not allow for your manuscript to be a part of a book that they would publish there.
Okay.
And I submitted it on one day, and 3 days later, they approved my manuscript.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. That's amazing. Now, did you go through self-publishing, or did you?
I went through Amazon KDP, which is the only reason for that is because I keep more royalties. I mean, I had options, a lot, and I still get mainstream publishers who want to, you know, like, oh, we got deals for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you'll keep 40 to 50% or more of my royalties. But yeah, I get a small advance, $20,000 maybe, or even $100,000. Mm-hmm. But then all they do is work to cover that $100,000. And then once they, you know, you get the initial rush of sales to cover the $100,000, they just take them off the shelf. And now you're back to marketing them on your own, except now you only own, you know, 40% of your royalties at best. Now, if I go Amazon KDP, yes, I'm not in the bookstores, but bookstores don't sell a lot of books anyways anymore. There's not very many bookstores left. Everybody buys from Amazon or downloads.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Is that like a fact? A hard fact?
Oh, no, they closed. Barnes and Nobles went out of business. I think there's only a couple Borders or whatever.
They only have a couple of brick and mortars, but they do all, have all online.
It's done. Everything's all. And the brick and mortar stores are history when it comes to books. There's only a couple left.
I like hard copy. Like, I like.
No, I'm not talking about hard copy. No, you can still buy the hard paperback. You just buy it from online.
So, yeah, okay.
So it's not a brick and mortar store. You can order my book, a paperback.
Bring bookstores back. Whoever can do that, bring that back. Let's go to bookstores.
They don't. That's the problem. People just order your book from their couch and then it's delivered in 2 days and they can sit, you know, they don't have to go to a bookstore. That's just how people buy books now. And so anyway, that's. You can. There's another. I went to a book con two years ago in the Javits, New York City.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big publishing conference. Don't do it. I mean, it's super expensive and the ROI is not great. But I mean, that was crazy. Where me and another author split a booth. It was like $6,000, and just to get, you know, and then you're in New York City. But the experience is super cool.
Yeah.
It's the biggest book publishing conference in the world, like second biggest in the world. And you're there. I think John Grisham was over talking over there, and there's all these cool authors around. But you know, I sold a lot of books. I don't know, I think I sold 500 books or something. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, in the end, I just barely covered my expenses of that. So
you mentioned earlier a little bit about, you know, if you get a publisher, then you have to do the marketing yourself. So,
that's it.
I want to ask you both, how did you handle the marketing for your book? What was that process like? You want to?
Yeah, for me, Christian Faith helped me out a lot. My book is on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble, and they're all online stores. But for marketing, they did my press release, gave me a copy of it, and then you can put it in your local newspapers. I've done a couple of book signings. I just came back from Philadelphia. I went down there and did a show on Heart of the City Radio.
Nice.
But you have to find ways to get your name out there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You do have to do that. Especially,
that's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work.
It's a full-time job for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, then I work through the day. So
yeah, So that's the tough thing is working and then writing and editing and then publishing and marketing. And
yes.
Marketing is the hardest part.
Taking the time to engage with the people, you know,
you have
readers.
To find the different tools that are out there for authors. I'm going to be in an authors expo that's going to be in Jackson here in a couple of months. But you have to find different things that you can do as an author to get your name out there.
Mm-hmm.
You can use your social media platforms, but that's only going to take you so far.
Right.
You have to find yourself doing a little bit more.
You got to get to the book club. I like, because my genre, like your genre is very difficult to break into because unless you're previously been famous or you know, an ex-senator or something, it's hard to actually break into that. And there's a lot of books. For me, the fiction genre is easier to break into, but you got to have a really good product. But I do, but marketing it is. Those fan groups, like I got these fan groups. There's probably 100 mafia fan groups on between Instagram and Facebook, and the combined total of them is in the millions. Mm-hmm. And so, not very many of the percentage will buy books because they're just either poor or cheap. But whatever the case is, a lot of them have. I've sold a lot of books that way, and that's through Instagram and Facebook and stuff like that. And other with just my personal page, you know what I mean. But what's interesting is, like, I don't know, if you're like a friend of yours cannot post a review on Amazon.
No, they cannot.
Because it's a biased review and they won't do it. So,
or Goodreads.
Yeah, exactly. So I have 5-star reviews across the board, both of my novels, and 100% on volume 2, like 98% on volume 1. And but a lot of people are like, yeah, yeah. But there's quite a few. I think I have like 58 reviews on volume 1 and, you know, 30, 40 on volume 2. Which is quite a bit. I was making a comparison to somebody else. John Grisham a couple of weeks ago had his last two books. One of them had 26 reviews, and it's got 3 stars. The other one had 3.5 stars with like 10 reviews or whatever. I'm like, I got better reviews than John Grisham and his last two books. But anyway, marketing them is always going to be the hardest part. It's constant battle where you make these posts, you share them to all the groups, you know, and then have people share them and push them. But, you know, it's always working. One day, it just all of a sudden goes bing, you know. You got to get into the big book clubs. These big book clubs, you got to get somebody to read them in the book club. That's where my sales come from. From even Goodreads. Oh, they got the worst platform. The algorithm is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, you can go to Goodreads and punch in the name of my book, and it doesn't pop up at all. Like, it's not 10, not 5. To be a king. That's pretty obvious. Even if you put my name, Alan Gunnar Limlum, to be a king, it still doesn't pop up. Aww. And they're like, oh, well, it's about ISBN search. I'm like, how the hell would an average person know the ISBN number of my book?
Unless you're a college student.
Right?
Facts.
It's ridiculous. So really? That's a joke.
Oh, okay. Really quick, before we get any further, I just want to take this time. We're going to have a music break, and we'll be right back.
I don't need to pay.
And we're back. So during break, I was flipping through the book, and I think link 9. Nope, that's not the right link. Where is it? Link 11. No. Unto me was a child was born. What's the link for this? What's the link?
There's
number?
No link.
There's no link. Okay. So I noticed in here you refer to your children's father as my baby's dada, which is interesting. So to add to which is tell me about this. I've never. And you got the dada, like, right. Italicized every time.
Yes. Every time. So I choose not to use names in my book. I didn't want anyone to feel uncomfortable because I didn't ask anyone permission. Mm. So each person has a signature way of me knowing who they are by each one. And so all of my kids, their dad is called Dada in the book, and that's because my youngest grandson, Cash, he calls his dad Dada.
Oh,
yeah, and okay. So I use that for each one of my children's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So in this, I was looking through, you talk a little bit about you were in a foster care,
yes.
A children's home,
yes.
And then made your way into, obviously, I don't know, you were married, is that the baby's dada?
I had all of my children before I was 25 years old,
okay.
And not being married.
And you have 3 children?
I have a total of 4.
4, okay.
Yes, and then me and my husband together, we have more.
Okay, cool. So 4 children.
Yes.
And you had them all before 25.
Yes.
So that's all in a book.
That's in the, not in this one.
That's not in this one. Not in this one.
You know, if you ever, you know, you can always tell somebody's really nice just doing you for this. She is very nice. I could just, tell. Like this, it doesn't take. It took me 5 minutes to know. Like she is super sweet and nice.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, I'm sure you are. So it's still not a surprise.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, yeah, thank you.
We're welcome. From the thank same you. Hometown. Yay.
Jamin's like, yeah, I'm nice too. Right. it's the city thing. It's in the water.
Put Jackson, I'm on the back.
Yeah. Oh, you're from Jackson.
I mean, I'm from there too.
I spent time.
Yeah, okay.
I was in prison in Jackson, so was that.
We're all from Jackson.
Right.
Small world.
I'm there.
So I was married. I was only married to one of my sons' dad, and that's my youngest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah.
So I am like, I'm ready to go home already. I'm like, can we wrap this up and read the book?
Yes.
Like, I will finish this by tomorrow, guaranteed.
And any questions that you have, I'm willing to answer them for you. I just don't want to give the storyline away for the ones who are listening who have not read.
No, I love it. And I think it's great the way that you approached the process in writing up until your 25th year.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Not only does it leave, you know, readers wanting more, but it also, I think, helps pace yourself.
Yes.
I've been in the process of writing my book for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. I just started taking it really seriously in the past year.
Just do it.
It is so overwhelming. It is so, and especially like you, I'm kind of going from, I started going from the beginning and started almost like chronologically writing.
Yes.
But there are some days where I'm motivated to write about one thing and other days. So now I'm kind of bouncing around, but it's just, it's a lot. And I'm trying to do it all in one book.
So you're trying to do it all in one book. Did you write it down on paper first or are you typing it straight from?
Typing it straight. I mean, originally, I mean, I was talking 2010, 2011.
Uh-huh.
I had notebooks upon notebooks where I'm just writing there. So I had those. And then it came once I started getting more, I guess, technologically savvy.
Advanced.
Yeah.
Advanced.
Uh-huh. I started writing in draft emails. Mm-hmm. And just because I didn't at the time, I don't know, there wasn't like Google Drive and all of that, or if there was, it was so new. So I didn't know how to keep all of my writings in one place. I was using my emails as like a draft. So I had all these. So when I started taking it seriously, I started compiling all of these paper, like hard paper copies that I had along with the draft emails and putting them into some resemblance of a structured order.
Can I give you some advice?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I've written 9 novels. I guess I can.
Absolutely.
So, and they're all average probably 700 pages. So, first thing, use Word, are you familiar with Word?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do use Word.
Okay. And then the second thing is if you really want to write your book, look at the ending and write to it, meaning don't stop until you get there. Forget anything else, all distractions. I know you have a life to live, kids, family, whatever, and other things. But don't say, oh, man, this is awesome. No, just keep looking at that ending and all the little plot and subplots and twists. And create them as you go, characters as you go. You'll be inspired in each chapter to create a new twist or a new whatever.
Right.
That all fit together for that ending. So see the ending it's way at the other end of the tunnel.
See, the interesting thing is that I don't have an ending yet because
you have to find one.
You've got
to
find
you
the
have
ending.
To find, you cannot write
you
without
need the
ending.
Ending.
Now you're that's why you're
I don't
all over
know
the
what
place.
My ending is. No, I'm no. still living.
So break it up in segments.
Well, it's about your life.
Yeah.
Or is it not fiction at all?
No, it's like real shit. It's all it's my life. So I'm trying to I have to stop it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this, like, obviously this year will be kind of like the end point, but I haven't figured out exactly how I'm going to kind of tie it up. Obviously, there will be more after it. I don't intend necessarily on writing
open
any
ended.
Follow-up books.
So,
what's your audience? Do you have your audience in mind, a specific audience? Is it a romance? Mm-hmm. Is it a self-help? Is it a, you know?
It's definitely self-help.
Mm-hmm. That's the hardest one to break into. I'm telling you right now.
For me, it's not really breaking in.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yeah, I know. It could be cathartic, meaning you're doing it for you.
It's definitely more of a healing process.
Right.
For me,
exactly.
And also just, you know, you're told, or I was told so many times over the course of my life, you should write a book. So finally I was like, well, I guess I'm going to
write it down. And just write till she, like you said, date, you have an ending in mind, last New Year's.
Yes.
Right.
That's
right.
It. Mm-hmm. Just write to them.
So but it's so much as the process now is that I make myself write for an hour a day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. It's like I don't care what I write about. I could start at the beginning. I could the end. Maybe I'll go back and reread some stuff
that's
and add some
too.
Details or whatever. Mm-hmm. But as long as I'm writing at least an hour a day, which
the therapeutic, it's cathartic, it is
therapeutic. Yeah. And so that's another thing too. And the reason why I thought it would be great to have you on the show is because I know that there are a lot of people who I interact with who are either wanting to empower others, mm-hmm. or wanting to tell their story, or just inspired mm-hmm. by people who tell their stories. And yes. so I'm sure there are people out there who have thought about writing a book or mm-hmm. writing something. And I know I'm going through the process, and right. I'm thinking of all of these things that I can yeah. possibly mm-hmm. share in the future once I'm finished. But the opportunity to kind of pick your brains, I thought, was a great opportunity. And also to share mm-hmm. some of my experiences in writing. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, what we were discussing, it being therapeutic, is that because you are detailing your yes. life, not the most comfortable periods of your right. life all the time. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you, having to relive it in such detail that you have to evoke that emotion in the reader? Because that's been a struggle for me.
Yes. So what, it was so hard for every chapter. Not even the whole chapter when I was writing it, I would tell my husband, okay, we got to take a break. I don't care if we take a walk, but I got to remove myself from this. Mm-hmm. And I gave myself time frames that I would stop writing or I wouldn't be able to sleep. Mm-hmm. And there was nights that I didn't, to yeah. be honest. But I would just take breaks, honestly. And I would tell my husband, hey, you ready to take a break? Yep, let's go. And I would take whatever I needed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, like, because yeah. there's, and I'm glad, like, I'm sorry that it, you know, that's part of the process, mm-hmm. but I'm also happy to know that I'm not alone.
You're not alone.
Like, there are days when I'm just like, I can't, I don't know if I can even do this. Like, mm-hmm. this is too much and I need a break. And then right. I'll walk away, I'll take a break. And then I'm like, all right, the next time. But there are chapters that I dread going back to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Don't go back and edit until you're done writing.
Oh, your by the way, those chapters will be the best ones. And those will be yes. the ones that make your book.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. And then
there's quite a few. No.
Yeah. Honestly, don't go back.
You're not
and
alone.
Edit. Yeah. Don't go back and edit until you're done writing.
Mm-hmm. See, I go back and edit you're like often.
Yeah. You're reliving it over and over. And so you're never going to get to the end.
Yeah.
And then pick something positive that since you're doing something in your story, I ended when I went to a barbecue at my grandmother's house and this lady invited me to church. So mm-hmm. find something positive to end your novel and write towards
that's
that.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a good idea of how I want to end it now. But yeah, that was really great.
Mm-hmm.
So you did you know when you started writing that you were going to break this up into two different books?
Yes, I know. Okay. I'm going to break it up into three.
And how long did it take you to write the first book?
I've always journaled. Mm-hmm. And so taking my journals that I've been writing for a lifetime and putting it into a book is totally two different things. I journaled all the way up until I wrote the first one. And actually writing Shackled per se, I started writing it and it took me 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah, because I've been doing it for a long time.
Look, I'm like,
yeah.
If we have another break, I have some copies. I have two copies of my book that are for, I'm giving to the owner of Needles of Agio, uh-huh. long story short, but I'll bring them in. But anyway, I'll tell you a story about them is they were originally one book. And sorry,
you split it up?
Sorry for all my fans and readers because they're like, what? I had to buy two books. Yeah, well, the total was between the two, it's almost 1,100 pages. So you have you have a book that's this big. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not viable to try and sell a book that big. I'd have to sell it for $45 to make any money.
Right.
And you know, it's just not so, but luckily there's a perfect halfway point, literally halfway. Mm-hmm. So 29 chapters into volume one, there's a halfway point. There's no resolution to the story at that point, but then I give a teaser of volume two at the end of volume right. one. And now then you can go to volume, and even volume three, there's not a, you don't know what happens. It's kind of, it ends an open book. No, I shouldn't be saying that because there's people watching or reading it. But whatever. I mean, you'll get to the, you get, see, I'm always in trouble.
Always in trouble.
What I do, I say something that gets me in trouble. So, but anyway, but yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of my fans don't know is that, in fact, that book was originally one book.
Wow. So when you were writing, you wrote the end first and then you wrote up to
it? No, like I said, you know, in life, you know, the guy with the wicked jump shot, mm-hmm. you know, Jordan's, and you got the guy super fast, you know, and you got the guy who's super smart on a computer, or you got the, my gift is writing.
Yeah.
And I was always pretty good with these. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? I'm a good athlete and I could whoop You know,
so writing and fighting.
So writing is what I got.
Writing and fighting.
Writing and fighting. So I could.
Gotcha.
So writing is what I could do well. So it comes very natural. Before I write a novel, I see the beginning, the middle, and the end. Uh-huh. So you always see the you want to establish in the beginning of a book, you want to establish the theme and the plot, and then in the middle have a conflict, and then the end have a resolution. Years after I'd written 5 novels, I picked up a writer's market book, and by somebody, all these great writers were saying, and they said this, you know, you can go to a literary school and they will teach you this formula, which is the exact formula that I knew naturally.
Yeah.
And that's, maybe it's because I read a lot of books, but I know it's a gift from God, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's the gift. And so I don't see a lot of my story in my head. Mm-hmm. I see, okay, here's, I'm going to start it with these basic main characters. The conflict will be somewhere in here. And the way at the end, I will twist everything to and coalesce at the very end. That makes sense. So everyone's like, whoa. And then I just start writing and have fun. I have fun.
Me
and
too.
One thing that I don't do is second guess the call. So you get to a point where there's a fork in the road. I can go this way with the story. I can go that way with the story.
That's a good point.
And then I say, which way to go? Which way do you go? I don't sit there and stew on it for a day or two or minutes. I just go, all right, I'll go this way with this character and make the plot to go this way. And that's it. And I don't go 3 chapters this way and go, man, what if I would have went this way, though? Should I go back? I never do that.
Don't second guess yourself.
Have you ever thought about writing alternative endings and, like, for your fan groups and sharing that just to...
No, but I do have... You know, do that's cool, sometimes. Though. I don't I do that. Cool. But I have... But I write something called, like, The King Chronicles, for example. These are a series of short stories that are being made into a graphic novel, by the way, by an amazing artist, but that are just stories based on the characters from my novels. So basically, I pluck the characters out of my novel and have them doing everyday kind of crazy mafia stuff, but they have nothing to do with the actual plot of my book. And so they're pretty cool.
That's
so
cool.
Just extra, you know, I use them as teasers. I publish them and people read them at the end. There's a link to my book and then they go
and
buy
then
the
they
book.
Can buy the book.
Then they go buy the book.
And see, I'm like you. I can just write. Yeah. And maybe because I'm a reader, but I just love to write.
Oh, maybe because you're a writer.
Yeah. Yeah, that too.
let me tell you, if you're that's the thing. Everybody wants to be a writer. If it doesn't come natural, odds are you're not. I'm not saying you're not or you're not.
Right.
I'm just saying if it doesn't, if you just don't write and it feels like breathing, you're probably never going to be a great writer. Yeah. And then that's unfortunate because a lot of people want to be a writer, but then they write 5 chapters and then they hand it to someone who's a writer and they go, oh my God, are you serious? I mean, it makes no sense.
I love to write.
I do too. I always have, like, I was, you know, growing up in honors English. I was always writing poems.
Sure. Well, then you're probably a writer.
Cause you're like, for sure.
I wish my mother was alive. She was an English teacher. She died when I was 19. She never had.
She would have been so proud.
Thank you. She never had a chance to see me, you know, do my thing. And I hope she's in heaven. Smiling,
she's shining down on you and seeing it.
And because you know, I when I write, I take it serious. I aim straight for the fences on everything I touch. Everything. That's the thing about me. If everyone who knows me, they're like, that dude, he doesn't hit base hits, man. He hits grand slams every time he touches the bat. That's just who I am, and I don't stop.
Yeah,
it's just like I got an apparel line, and I got this big event that I'm having, and my book, I got another novel. The novel that I'm about to release later this year, called The Snowman Chronicles. So many of my fans are already like, where is it? It's about a cocaine dealers who are kind of they get involved with the mafia. And so I describe it as imagine the movie Blow, if you've ever seen the movie Blow, and Goodfellas intersect. You know what I'm saying? But it's super crazy, an amazing story, and the plot is really good. The twist in the plot is just mind blowing at the end, and how it ends. It's just super. It's a long book. It's like probably almost 800 pages, but that's just the way it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
So how long does it take you to write an 800 page book?
About a year working full time. Yeah, it takes me about a year to write, and that works. And
that include like editing and everything, or is that just to write the manuscript?
No, in fact, it's just to write the manuscript is probably 10 to 12 months working 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. I think Sundays off. And then, but that's in prison though. So if I had a computer with Word, it'd be much faster because every time I'm typing in, they got to print it out, and it takes 45 minutes to print it out, and then I got to put it on a little stand, and I got to go line by line, then I got to jump into there.
They don't
using
have
the code.
Computers in, well, this was a while ago, right?
No, they don't have computers in prison. Oh, well, a while ago. I've only been out 30 months. No, so I've been out 2.5 years. Yeah,
okay.
That's it.
That's why he's always
I just
in trouble.
Got out parole a couple
He's still adjusting.
Right. Right? So, I mean, but no, they don't have what they have. They don't even allow this anymore. The system is so designed to keep the inmates down that it's just because they don't even want you to have access to a typewriter, which means you could have, like, type up affidavits and things for appealing. But anyway, they have a little typewriter, word processor type typewriter that is the technology of probably maybe 1965, and they'd sell those for $350, $400, and I was one of the last persons to be able to buy one, and I did, and I'm so grateful. It was my mistress. It was my great escape. It was the only thing that kept me sane. Mm-hmm. It was the only thing that kept me from killing people.
Oh that boy. That was
so dark. No, right.
That really was.
Oh, God. We got a minister in the house.
Can we lay hands?
Let's all pray.
Oh boy!
So,
it's music.
I was really in prison. That typewriter kept me from going nuts.
That makes me want a music box. I want to play music when I talk. Right?
Every time I talk, the Godfather movie. I need to pay someone to follow me around, and every time I talk, they're just like. My wife, I get her all the time because it's a habit, but when I walk out of the room, I shut the light off. And just to be funny, as soon as she starts talking, I shut the light off, and then I'll turn it back on to talk, and then I'll turn around, and she's like, you are only the one allowed to talk in this? Like, when the light goes on, I talk. When I shut up, shh.
We
crack up about it. It's just a habit. But it's
so then you said you married her the day after you got out. So you guys have been married for about 2.5 years then?
Yep,
okay. And prior to congratulations. So prior to that, how long were you guys pen paling?
So that's an interesting, really fun story. God, I wish I had I don't know if you watched the video about the documentary that's being made on my life.
I watched a little bit of it.
Oh, you got to watch it because at the end I talk about my wife. But so one day my cousin starts a Facebook for me because I had just left my ex-girlfriend who I'd been with 20 years and kind of just said, go on with your life. Wow. Which was really hard to do.
Because you were locked up, you were like, listen.
Just go on with
your life. You were locked up for half your relationship.
I had been locked up for 7 years, which I'd been with her for 13 years before I got locked up. And another 7. But she started seeing someone. I sensed it. I'm like, listen, just go on. You know, you're not answering the phone. You're not coming to visit. You're not sending me money. It's all good. I mean, I understand. I got 6 more years left going to your life. And 6.5 years. So my cousins could tell I was not happy. I was kind of upset and very gray. My world. It's the only way I could describe it. My life was empty. So he said, I'm going to say, he's a born-again Christian. He's the guy who baptized me. Also, the day that I got married, he baptized me 20 minutes later.
Wow.
So anyway, he wrote on there that I am a Christian and that I'm writing these books.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my wife, at the time, I didn't know her. Her name's Maria. She went to my high school, which is a big high school in St. Clair Shores. I don't know if you know where that is. Mm-hmm. I have no idea who she was, though. She come from a very strict Muslim home where she wasn't allowed to do anything. Mm-hmm. So I never even knew who she was. I was a gregarious, you know, tough guy for the neighborhood, known for fighting and selling drugs and this wise guy type stuff, you know, and I was a bad guy. She only heard two things about me, that I was, that my family was tied to the mafia and that I was known for beating people up. That's it. So... Anyway, she saw my Facebook that I was a writer and she worked for a publisher. So she's like, you know what? I'll write him because I maybe pen pal because she was a new Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Her boyfriend, her boyfriend at the time had introduced her to Christ. She became born again. She's very zealous about it at the time. And so she started writing me and she said, I'd like to read your book. And, you know, if you can have somebody send me the manuscript. So I said, yeah, sure. So my friend, I had her send him or had him send her the manuscript, now 1,000 pages mm-hmm. manuscript. And it was turned into a PDF file. And so she read it on her phone in like mm-hmm. 3 days, just blew through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she wrote me and told me, because see, prison email, it's called JPay. Mm-hmm. So we could JPay back and forth. Mm-hmm. And she wrote through it and she says, you know, I've read 10,000 books in my lifetime. I read books like 5 books a week sometimes. She's like, I'm not going to lie. Your book is probably the top 3 books I've ever read in my life. She later changed it to 1 or 2, maybe tied for her favorite. She's like, I didn't want to blow your head up that much. But she's like, I want to help you. Maybe I can help you get this published. And so we began writing back and forth. And I had literally my my seventh novel I was working on called The Lion Chaser. A very cool story about a foster runaway who ends up being on the run but becomes the youngest billionaire in America by just hustling. And but anyway, so she starts writing me. We ended up writing 1,000 pages of letters. Over a year, we basically fell in love. I mean, just so many moments where Me Too moments, like, oh my God, I think the same way. I see the world the same way. She loved up north. I love fishing, hunting, and camping and stuff. And that's why this summer I'm shooting a television show that's called Off the Cuffs, all about us being, you know, on the way. But anyway, she loved everything I loved, and she was just, it was just like, it was a match made in heaven. No joke. She knew. We knew it was God. There was no doubt. I mean, and so.
Nice.
After like 3 months, she's like, I called it the painted line. I'm like, listen, man, I got 6 years left. You can't fall in love with me. There's a line we can't cross. No flirting, no innuendos, no nothing like that. Didn't matter. We just kept flirting and doing innuendos. And then she finally said, I'm in love with you. I would wait. I want to wait for you. I want to marry you. And so. She left her boyfriend of the time and went, and she said, where do you want to live? I said, up north by my dad. He lives way up north. And when I get out, all I want to do is fish and hunt and just, I'll publish my books and whatever. And she went out in the woods and waited 6 years all by herself in the middle of the woods, in the middle of nowhere for 6 years.
Wow. I think y'all should write a book about that.
I know. People say that people say that all the time. And that's what it'd be called, the painted line, you know? And so that day that I got out, I went home. She had a big feast for me. My boys picked me up. They took me to breakfast, drove me home the way up north, and then had a big feast. The next morning, I went and worked out with my cousin at 4 a.m. Next day, I took a shower, went to the courthouse, got married. It was a funny story because all the guys were in tears, and the clerk and my wife weren't crying. And me and my cousin and my best friend were all crying. It was funny. Three dudes crying, and the clerks are whatever. And then I said, Joe, he wasn't an ordained minister or nothing like that, but I'm like, Joe, I want you to baptize me in Lake Huron because it's very sacred to me, this beautiful lake up by my where I'm going to be living. So 20 minutes later, we're at the lake, and he baptized me and my wife in the water, and I started my new life.
Wow.
That's awesome.
That's pretty crazy.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So real quick, we got about 5 minutes, so we got to wrap up, and I want to make sure that you both have an opportunity to let everyone know how they can find you, follow you, buy your book, learn more about you, all of that good stuff. Also, I have my son in the studio. Mans, do you want to say something on the mic?
Yeah.
You want to say hi?
Say so.
No.
You sure? Handsome devil.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe next time. Okay. So my son is here with us today, but if you don't already follow 3030 on Thriving, you can find us on Facebook, or you can follow me on Instagram, T-H-E-E, Best Amber, and then The Best Amber pretty much everywhere else. And then, Roslyn, if you want to let everyone know how they can find you, follow you, purchase your book. And by the way, her book is called Shackled.
Yes.
Facebook Live viewers.
Get the book.
And where can they find it at?
You can find my book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and any place where they have books that they sell. Any online bookstore. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Hey, you're so nice. You're not in trouble anymore.
Tell my wife. She's the only one who doesn't know.
Maria.
Yeah, I'm good, Maria.
Yeah, he's not in trouble
anymore. Get out of jail free card, at least for today.
Please.
For today, please.
I love
you. He was well behaved ish for the most part.
I don't know about that. Right?
That helped. Yeah, that really helped.
You can find me anywhere social media, Roslyn Pryor Inspirations. You can find me on Instagram, anything social media, you'll be able to find me. And I gave you my card. If you find some people that have read the book and they are in need of help or they want to talk to someone, give them my name, give them my number.
Absolutely.
I'm more than willing to help them.
Absolutely. And I'll put your information on my website too, so anybody can be
able to find me on social media. I'm maxed out on my personal page, but I'll make room. I'll delete someone.
Okay. I've never done that. I'm like, hold on 1 second. Give me a minute. I'm
have to delete people all the time.
Come on.
Yeah. So my GunnerDetroit.com is my website. You can learn everything about me. I'm on Instagram, GunnerDetroit. And my Facebook author page is author Gunnar Allen Lindblom. And also, I wanted to say really quickly about my event to support Gilda's Club, the Cancer Foundation. It's this September. So go to OurThingApparel.com. I own Our Thing Apparel, which is a really cool apparel line. But we are hosting a big event this September, a 1920s speakeasy themed dress ball where you dress in, you know, 1920s regalia. Come in. have some drinks, have some good food, support this good cause. Big party at Burt's Theater Warehouse downtown in Eastern Market of Detroit, and be a really fun time. So check that out. You can, it's at my website, Gunner Detroit. Or excuse me, ourthingapparel.com.
Okay, and then Jalen.
Great show.
Okay.
Thanks, y'all.